My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons, part of the Soundstone Network. Welcome to the show. I am here with a bonus episode dropping into the feed. I have a one-off review of the Long Island Retro Gaming Expo. This was just happened this past weekend. I got to meet some friends and hang out and meet some folks, sell my books, introduce them to what I do. Even did a panel on Pixels and Polygons and the pitfalls and things that I've run into to hopefully help encourage people to learn from those things and see how incredibly easy and incredibly difficult making retro gaming content can be. But it was a great weekend and a great convention, and Luis, past guest of the show, was there, got to meet him in person and hang out all weekend. But he suggested we do a little review and a recap of the event itself and kind of talk about it. And honestly, it was a real great time, and I definitely would love to go back again in the future. So we thought it was a good idea. So we sat down and chatted about our time over the weekend, recapping some of the highlights and some of the things and exhibits and things that the show offered. And if you haven't considered going to this show in at all, like, you should definitely consider doing so in the future. They celebrated their 10th year this year, and the entire crew was awesome. They were super accommodating. They were, like, constantly checking in on folks, making sure that the show was running smoothly. From everything I saw, there was no, you know, hiccups or problems, you know, that can sometimes arise in running these things with, you know, thousands of guests coming through and hundreds of vendors and people. It seems stressful, but I'm glad they did it. I'm super thankful for them for having me out as a guest as well. So to Joe and Leroy and everybody at the Long Island crew, thank you. You guys did a great job, and this episode is for you. So y'all give a listen to conversation Luis and I had, sharing about what we saw, the different panels, the different exhibits, the different games we played, things we picked up, and just a highlight of the show overall. We'll be back with a regular episode at the usual time on Friday, but for now, enjoy some bonus podcasts in your feed. Y'all have a great rest of your day, and bye.
Hello, we are Kirby Conversations, a podcast on Kirby, along with other adjacent subjects like Smash Brothers, HAL Laboratory, and other related Nintendo games.
In each episode, we take an in-depth, well-researched look at a Kirby topic, drawing on our decades of experience playing Kirby games, creating Kirby-related content, and working in and around the video game industry. I'm Sean Douglas. I'm a theater and video game journalist.
And my name's Bridget. I'm an online Kirby commentator and collector.
Our team also includes photographer and Nintendo ambassador Kai, Captain Dangerous Parker, and Gigi, the editor-in-chief of Wick Kirby. Join us for deep dives into Kirby's history, interviews with industry professionals, and even inside looks at Nintendo, as together we explore all things Kirby and HAL Laboratory. You can find Kirby Conversations on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to a bonus episode of Pixels and Polygons. I am, what is this, recording this on a Tuesday, back from a weekend at the Long Island Retro Gaming Expo 2025. And I was chatting with a former guest, past guest, and current guest, and future guest, Luis Aguas-Vivas, who is hanging out at the show with me as well. So welcome back to the show, Luis. How are you doing?
Yeah, great to be here, Darren. Thanks for having me. I look forward to talk about our you know, our escapades at the Long Island Retro Gaming Expo. So a lot of fun. I think it's a really special like convention. There's really nothing like it.
Oh yeah, I agree. Yeah, this was my first year. So yeah, I mean that's the point of this bonus episode. Just kind of wanted to recap the show, hear thoughts from Luis and share some thoughts myself about what we thought about the weekend, what were some of the highlights, and really just to encourage you all to check it out yourselves. Like, this is definitely a show if you're in the New York area or want to make the trip to do it. Like spoiler alert, it's well worth your time, attention, and money for sure. But yeah, how does that sound? You want to recap some of our highlights and some of our favorite bits of the show, Luis?
Yeah, I'm down.
Yeah, it's a 3-day event. They do Friday. It starts at the afternoon, so it's not like super early or anything. So the show day one started at 3 p.m. And it goes into the evening, which is kind of interesting. 9 p.m. on Friday and Saturday, and then like a Friday 5 o'clock closing show. But I think the most unique aspect of Long Island's Retro Gaming Expo, to me, being the new attendee, the new guest. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the most interesting aspect is its location. It's in the Cradle of Aviation Museum there in Long Island. Like, well, I say Long Island. Like, what's the actual city it's in? Do you know? I don't have the address in front of me. Whatever. It's out
that's
there.
That's a good question. I think it's Amherst. But I'm not certain. I'm not, you know, I'm a New Yorker from the city. Anywhere, anything outside of that is like, it's the same thing to me. So,
but yeah, it is. It's if you go into your maps or Google it, but the Cradle of Aviation Museum out there, you will find it. So the show floor and the show space is a museum by day, and all of the setups, the vendors, the tables for guests, all of like the museum elements and like special like sections are all set up like in front of actual live like aviation museum like content. So it's like, it's really weird. If you really wanted to, you can accidentally learn about a bunch of aviation history while wandering around like all the spaces they have, all the little hangars and halls and museum rooms and everything, which I mean, coming from somebody who's done a lot of conventions and shows as a fan and a vendor and everything, they're oftentimes in convention centers and convention halls, which are just wide square concrete spaces with the same like black grid wire stands set up, you know, to have little 10 by 10 squares of people all selling and, you know, doing the same things and everything. Visually, it doesn't break itself up at all. But here, like, just because of its unique footprint, it just makes it special all on its own, which was just super rad to walk around. How many years have you done? Have you gone now to this show?
Is this only my second? Only my second time on it, and both of the times I've been there have been as a guest. I've heard about it before, and it's something that I've always been interested in. Just, I mean, as you were talking about, just like the venue itself is just such an odd place, that, you know, to have a convention like that. Cause, yeah, I mean, I've also been to a lot of conventions, and they're all in convention centers or places that like you just expect, and there's nothing necessarily like unique about the venues themselves, right? It's like standard fare. This one, it's just worth it just even to like see it, right? Just like, wait, so you're having like a retro video game convention inside like this museum that has like actual and real like planes inside. Right. Yeah. It's not just like, oh, here's like a picture of photos. It's like, oh no, there's like planes like in on the ceiling, like hanging from the ceiling. And they get really creative with it, where sometimes some of the structures you can interact with, like some of the you can sit down and play games inside them. It's just amazing. It's one of my favorite things to do is just to just walk around and not even play games myself, just like see people as they play like within these spaces. And oftentimes it's just you'll just see them or people that they're with, you know, they're engaged in the game, but they're also very much enamored with the space, right, that they're like inhabiting it. So that they're like looking around and they're like seeing. I have some highlights actually linked to this, but I'll wait, you know, until we get to that point. But I think it's really special.
Yeah.
And it's also just like the crowd that's there and like the folks that, you know, that run it, Joe and everybody else. It's just, they just do a great job. They do a really great job.
Yeah. The contacts who invited me out as a guest, Joe and Leroy both, they introduced themselves and came by. I had a table there selling my books and kind of promoting this Pixels and Polygon stuff in general. But they just came by regularly throughout the show, just constantly checking in, just being great hosts, like really nice guys. Put on, like, you know, the whole like crew, like everybody who's wearing a staff shirt, like, went out of their way to just be friendly and accommodating. I mean, like, yeah, my badge technically said guest, but like, you kind of have to like peek at that to read that. Like, they didn't, you know, just know by default that that's, you know, who I was. So, they were just naturally like helpful and supportive, directing you to where you want to go, and, just kind of running a great show all weekend long. I'm sure it's a lot of effort and, headaches, you know, arise, I'm sure, but you know, they did not make it appear that there was any drama behind the scenes, if there actually was any, but they ran a smooth show for sure. Just to kind of highlight more about it, like, of course, as like a retro gaming convention, like, you can go there and buy and shop for and look at a bunch of vendors. Like, there's a whole marketplace area that they had, like, right at the entrance area, and that even spilled into a little like back loop and everything. But how many vendors would you say? I mean, probably like 10 across, and then 3, 3, 3. I mean, there was a lot. I mean, there's a lot of folks.
I'll say over 20.
And, yeah.
And definitely, and, you know, they vary in sizes. You have some that are very much like, you know, arts and crafts, like do it yourself type of vendors. And then you have just pretty like big, like retro game, like shops, like in this, you know, from New York City and just like the surrounding area that are there that have just like thousands and thousands of games and hardware.
Yeah. The Retro Island Gaming, they were one of the sponsors of the show. They had a big presence there and a big booth and everything as well. But there's like, just for that alone, like going to a place where you can have centralized, like find a bunch of great like retro games and like, you know, dig through. Like, I was like, me and you were walking around a couple different times, but, you know, I kept stopping every time I saw PS1 games to just build my own little collection I'm building. And I mean, you know, PS1 games were literally at every single vendor. Like, some, everybody had, you know, even if it was a small, like, rare collection of like highly sought after and like high end ones, or just like throwaway, like cheap options, like there was enough variety of people selling stuff that there was something for everybody, I think. Like, you know, you can see some oddities and some rarities and everything, and see some like really cool things and unique things up close. You know, we saw a lot of like Famicom and Super Famicom games, and then even like the Japanese like GameCube cases. Yeah, you know, we both you know, love that little like compact size, that little slip case and everything. Lots of folks selling lots of cool stuff. But it was more than a marketplace. They have all like their free play areas and just tons of consoles set up all around. They were all themed and like different sections. Like, you know, we called out the Koopa corner where like they had all the like a bunch of RPGs, like with little pop-ups and like standout cards that like kind of talked about the games that were on display for all the different systems they had. But, you know, they had sections for shoot 'em ups, for music games, for platforming games, full motion video games. There was a section for like fighting games as well, and like, you know, not only that, but there was a giant like PC like free play section that had like original like PC hardware and versions of a bunch of classic games you'd want to get your hands on, like all like set up just for you to just walk up to, sit down, get comfortable, and play, like play a little or play a lot. I know you played some of one of your favorite games of all time, you said Sonic Adventure 2. You got some hands-on time with that, but did you play any others over the weekend just for fun, just to be a fan of?
I played some, but I need to clarify, that's not, I don't like that game.
No,
at all.
You said it was one of the greatest games of all time.
No, I have Stockholm Syndrome. I just have I remember it fondly, and then you know, it's like, oh, this is good. And then I try and I'm like, oh, this kind of sucks. And then I just keep reverting back and forth between those, and it'll probably keep happening for all eternity. But it's, you know, stuff that I actually like enjoyed, though I did enjoy that time that I played it, you know, Sonic Adventure 2 Battle, just because of like the space there. Samba the Amigo with the maraca controllers, right next that. to a bomb, to a literal bomb that drops from a plane. I mean, where else can you do that? So it just, the thrill of shaking those maracas was heightened by potentially being like, what if this bomb is still like live and and I'm just like dancing and shaking these maracas so gloriously that it goes off and takes me in a blaze of maraca fueled glory. I'm Jammer Lammy as well. That was in the same section. Yeah. And that I didn't get to play it, but just seeing people play it and just, you know, being just so excited and have like so much joy, just like faces just beaming, right? It's just so awesome. I actually didn't play that many games. I usually don't play that many games this time. So a lot of it is like I live vicariously through a lot of people that mm-hmm. are playing in this type of setting. You know, I'm usually like basically like walking around talking to folks, or, you know, going to panels, or, you know, doing my own panels. So it's, but yeah, definitely, definitely the highlight though is like Samba the Amigo for me.
Yeah.
But I am a sicko in that game. My mother complained. It's like, I thought I'll have issues with you being a teenage boy or having like playing like games with killing and Satanism. I didn't know it was going to be a thing about a monkey with maracas. I'm like, I'm sorry, mom. I'll try better. I'll start playing Mortal Kombat and Doom for you.
The games continue to spill out though. I mean, like, honestly, the amount of stations that they had to play, like, there weren't like massive lines. It wasn't like they had like 20 different like units to kind of like play around with and all that stuff. Like they're just scattered all across the entire like footprint that they have, in like a little upstairs, like dark hangar area, kind of off near where I was, tabled at. There was this long hall of just like, arcade games, like all lined up. And then they had competitive arcade games down the first floor in that other hangar, that we went and we walked through, one of the mornings before they opened as well too, just like the variety of games that they all had out there. It's crazy, like all eras, all systems, all genres, all styles, just like ready to go, ready to play, get your hands on and have some fun with it. It was crazy.
Yeah, it was. And one thing to clarify for the listeners is like, these are like arcade cabinets, sometimes original arcade cabinets for some of these games. Mm-hmm. And you know, the gamut from, you know, Marvel versus, Capcom 2 to
gosh, damn.
It's like games that I've just never heard before. Just like, there was like a few Gundam games that I've never seen before.
Yeah.
So they get, and the consoles themselves, they have every major console there. I mean, sometimes several. And there's also like tournament areas where, you know, people do like LAN battles and, you know, in games from Halo to Mario Kart Double Dash. It's just, it's a lot of stuff there. It's just, and there's so much to do. Like, it's, you don't really get bored. And they really upped it this year too, because not only did you have like the free play area, you have the museum within the museum, right? Because it's an aviation museum, but then there's always a special exhibit, this year being the NES is a 40-year retrospective. So there was like an entire area dedicated to that.
Well, what's cool about those exhibits, though, it's not just like, hey, here's some more TV set up with games to play, which they did have down there. But behind all of that exhibit, they had, you know, big vinyl banners like that were, you know, large color prints with like really cool like details, and articles kind of written on the history of just Nintendo over 40 years of them, you know, on the history of the company. and you can go and you can see hands-on, like, you know, an original Famicom system, like, bundled up. You can see some Game & Watch handhelds, but you can go all the way around the ring that they had there, you know, up to, like, the modern hardware and modern platforms and everything. But the different versions of the NES, like, all the, in the glass cases, they had, like, original, like, boxed games and deconstructed games, magazines and flyers and pamphlets of, like, game data and all that stuff, all from the era. But, like, not just go buy games, go play games, but, like, actually learn something and see some, like, cool relics and some really cool details about it. Like, you know, it'd be one thing just to have them propped up there, but again, with all that, like, really well done, like, banners and information on it all, like, it felt like a museum exhibit, but you were in a museum, so it felt like even more like a museum exhibit. And then you had some giant, you know, F-14 Tomahawk fighter, you know, staring at you in the face, ready to crash into you at the same time too. So it's like a, this is an odd amount of fun in detail, and it was really cool to see all the exhibits. So yeah, they had a bunch more too, but that was the highlight. The advertised highlight of the year was that 40 years of the Nintendo system this year.
Yeah, it's definitely, it was great. Last year was the Dreamcast. That's what they did. So that was excellent too. But this year, I don't know why. I guess because I'm still bitter that the Dreamcast was essentially Sega's, like, last hurrah into console gaming. So it was still, it felt still painful for me to see. But the NES one, I definitely took that in stride. And also, Frank Cifaldi, the Video Game History Foundation, he had the, the centerpiece panel surrounding that, like, launching the NES, a 40-year retrospective, which was excellent. Which is him talking about essentially Nintendo launching the NES in the States and how a lot of that initial market research and a lot of the preliminary steps to testing the market was done in New York or the New York area, which added a lot to this.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we can let's pivot there and talk about some of the panels and discussions that were done all over the weekend. So that launching the NES one by Frank, that was in, like, their main theater, which is, like, a crazy room. It's like an IMAX style, like, screen, like this giant, in Vegas they have that new Sphere, you know, like, place and all that stuff. This is like a miniature version of that within a museum. But you have, like,
this is the protosphere.
Yeah, the protosphere.
The one in Vegas, the Vegas venue ripped off the one in the Museum of Aviation. Just joking. I don't actually know, but it's
but it's cool. It has, like, big amphitheater seating. So if you're on, like, the stage area where that is, you're, like, looking at this wall of folks. And so I'm sure that's quite an intimidating experience. But the room's, like, kind of, like, darkened out, and you've got the, you know, great lighting in there, but just that giant, like, wraparound screen that's up there and everything. So all their main panels were done there. They did some really interesting things this year. They had two different live musicians play on Friday night and Saturday night. One of them being, like, the Super Thrash Bros, who I was lucky enough to table next to, so it was kind of interesting to kind of see, meet some friends and have a good time next to them. But they did a lot in that room. What were some of the panels? I mean, you were quite busy. Not only did you host your own panel, but you also went to quite a few over the weekend to kind of support, you know, friends and folks and people in the industry, you know. But what were some of the highlights you had from the panels experience that you did?
It's a good question. I said one earlier, which was the Frank Cifaldi launching the NES panel. That was great. Other ones that really stick to mind, Stuart Gibbs, British Mascots, on Parade panel. That was really funny. For those who don't know, Stuart Gibbs is one of the he's a great writer and author. He's also a part of the Retronauts crew. He came all the way across the pond, you know, to be with us there. And that was really funny, just seeing just the complete crapshoot of parade that of British mascots, which are horrendous. I won't you know, speak their names here.
Yeah, well, I mean, Dizzy the egg, you know,
in prison, should be in prison. Yeah. Should be in prison.
What was that? What was the name of the
one? I wouldn't even eat it.
Horace. Horace was the name of that one that looked like a pair of pants walking backwards / elephant trunk thing. Like, gosh, I mean, only the British can bring over those abominations to us and pretend like there was joy to be had in those games. But that was the cool part. I mean, yeah, Stuart, he does a book called All Games Are Good, and real funny. Like, he's got like a great sense of humor about him, and it just genuinely, like, you know, is able to cover and look at games that, you know, may be discarded, you know, for certain reasons, but highlight, you know, what made them special and the games that, you know, he enjoyed, even with questionable qualities. But yeah, that was a fun panel to see. Yeah, I went to that one with you, and that was hilarious. That was a good time.
No, that was really good. Another one that comes to mind, so many. I'm just, the retro trivia with Diamond was really good.
Yes. Saturday night we competed. I also attended that one. I went to more panels. As a person who had a table trying to promote themselves and sell books, I did a number of panels, which is meaning that there was nobody at my table and I was just out and about on my own. But that trivia was challenging, and we placed fifth out of, I don't know how many teams were there, probably 12 teams or something, maybe more. I definitely think we should have done a little bit better, but the music and soundtrack style questions got the best of us. We basically just put up a dud there, but that was really fun. That was like, you know, if you've ever been to conventions and panels and all that stuff, oftentimes you're just hearing people talk about something and inform the audience on a topic, you know, which is what you want to go to it for. But this was interactive. We got sheets of papers to fill out an answer sheet, and we were scored. It was like PTSD from going back to school and getting a pop quiz, but just really fun and inventive questions from Diamond, who also was part of the Retronauts crew as well, which apparently they've done that before. So if I'm a future attendee, I will look forward to a panel like that from Diamond and definitely be in attendance for that. I had a great time there.
No, definitely. And another high, I mean, there's so many panels. I think every panel that I went to, I enjoyed. I would also, two more. One is The World of Unplayable Games. This is by Kevin Bunch, who wrote an excellent book on the Atari from 1977 to 78. That's out on a press run, just limited runs of book imprint. That panel was really great, just him like discussing games that either are actually unplayable, like in their original state, or are just extremely difficult to play because maybe there's only six, you know, arcade cabinets for it, and you know, and you have to track them down. Most of them aren't operational. That was really educational, and it was just also just a lot of fun just seeing that. The last one is your panel, actually, Pixels and Polygons, Find Your Niche Within a Niche. I thought that was really, really insightful. I don't think I've seen a panel like that where somebody actually goes through not only like what led them to, you know, want to write about games, I mean, self-publish books about games, like create a podcast, but actually going into great detail of that process itself. Of how it is to, you know, how it is to create, and I mean, you know, there was a fairly decent amount of people that showed up to, you yes. know, to be in that panel. So
I thought they were lost at first. I didn't know why there was anyone in seats when I went to go sit down in front of the room there. Wasn't sure if there was a panel that had just ended and they forgot to exit or what. But I mean, yeah, 3/4. Full, probably. I mean, I was thinking maybe I'd have one or two people, you being one of them. But yeah, that was a good time. A great experience for sure. And, you know, had time for some Q&A, and people actually had cues for me to give A's to, which was fun. And yeah, I mean, there were panels all throughout the weekend. on things on like Friday, like streaming retro, like how like streamers on Twitch and all that stuff play games to help preserve them for like a new audience. There was like a retro repair panel that like sounded interesting, but talked about how like restoration and repair to some of these games, you know, happen. Like Cheap Ass Gamers, a website I used to use a lot to like look for game deals and all that stuff. They did a panel, which was actually just recording an episode of their podcast as well. But like the weekend was full of them, like, you know, of all like angles and all branches of like the community, from like collecting to playing to preserving to promoting. You know, there was something for everyone, you know, on top of everything there was to see like within the show itself. So it was a cool time. Then they had things like tournaments and those high score challenges that were going on throughout the days as well, that you could participate in for free. They had scavenger hunts for kids. Like, it was nuts. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, there definitely is. It's just a stacked convention. Like, just between just like you walking around playing games, seeing what the vendors have on offer, panels, if you're competing in any like or taking part in any of the events. Yeah, there's so many things there. I mean, one thing that I do regret not seeing, albeit I had like a conflict of interest for it, so I couldn't like make it, was one of the music performances, which was Lacey Johnson, the guitar virtuoso. Lacey does a lot of really great work, especially like if you've gone to like Magfest, you know, those performances are amazing. And you know, I wanted to check it out in that weird dome arena thing there, and just like, because it's more, it's weird, so it's a pretty decent sized stage, but it's also intimate, right, just because of like the way that it's that is structured. So that's something that I wanted to see that I didn't get to see.
Yeah And then same thing, we were tabled next to I was tabled, I mean you were hanging out, but not that that matters. I don't know. I had to delineate that, make sure, you know, you weren't associated with me or whatever. But the super, super thrash bros, you know, they play like, you know, metal renditions of like classic gaming music and stuff. You know, they perform that next night. So I think from what I heard, that's newer. Maybe they did that last year, but bringing musical guests is something newer that the Long Island crew has done. But I think it's cool. It's just bringing in something different and bringing in a variety of things, you know, for different types of, you know, folks looking for something in the retro gaming world. But, you know, overall, I can tell, you know, why they've been able to do this for 10 years. This is their 10th anniversary. It was a good time. It was well put together. There were no crazy system outages or downtime. You know, like the lines to get in were always flowing and smooth. Like the whole crew and staff, like they clearly knew what they were doing. And like they, you know, I can tell why they've been able to successfully do this for 10 years. So, you know, hopefully they can do it for 10 more. But I think before I wrap it up, I'd love us to make sure we share all the highlights we want to talk about. I actually wanted to ask you, because you bought a couple things, what were the items you spent money on there and that you took home? You want to share some of the purchases you made over the weekend?
I mean, some of my purchases I think are fairly basic. It's things that I just like, I could have probably found other places that I just, you know, that it's like, oh, I'm here, it's like decent price. So I got a Nintendo Switch copy of a Captain Toad Treasure Tracker, which is a game that I really love. But I don't have a physical copy of, and you know, increasingly so, I've become very paranoid of, if I just have like the digital game only, am I going to be able to play it? Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to get a copy of that. I also got, really, most of the, outside of games, really, most of the cool stuff there was like buying zines. So like Yokai Kids.
Oh yeah, by, I got that Yo-Koi myself Kids, too.
I mean, sorry, yeah, I got both copies of that, like Volume 1 and 2. This is for people who aren't familiar with Ian Ferguson, who does like his own podcast, which I'm blanking on the name of right now. It's It's completely unnecessary. Completely unnecessary podcast. These were really great. ROM Mag, which I've never heard of before. There's stuff. There's really old school gamer magazine, which has been around now for 7 years. It's my first time actually having like a print copy of their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That was great. Now there is one game that I really wanted, and it's actually out of print, and it's very hard to find, especially in the States. I got at a decent price, and that's
Are you talking about this DS game? Is this going to be the highlight of your purchasing weekend?
No. That Space Invaders Extreme is not. I mean, I love that game. It's probably my favorite game of all time. But I got a cartridge of that for the DS. But no, the one I'm going to talk about is Mutazione, which is a game by Daigut Fabric, which is the studio famous for making 2023's arguably best game, which is Saltsea Chronicles, which is a fantastic adventure game. And Mutazione is also this in the same vein as that. It's like really fantastic game. And I just want a physical copy of that. I think it's a really important game in regards to its storytelling and its themes. And being able to find a physical copy of that, which, you know, they were available when it was released by I Am 8-Bit, which, you know, similar to like Limited Run and not like Lost in Cult, you know. There's like physical copies of a lot of like indie games. It was that expensive. It's like $30. But, you know, if that's a lot of these things like happen, end up being right. It's like Limited Run of these things. And then the prices just skyrocket. Mm-hmm. So, and trying to get a copy of that on eBay last time I checked, it was like $80, $90. It's like, I wouldn't pay that for almost any game. I was able to get a decent price copy for that. But that's really mainly, that's it when it comes to shopping for me. I didn't spend as much as I thought I was. But you know, there's also reasons for that. I'm going to be in Japan in about a month, and it's like, I can get a lot of those games for cheaper there. And, well, this is inside baseball, but a hack for people who want to buy physical games is Japanese copies of games tend to be better in the sense that they tend to release more on physical. So you're more likely to get a copy of a game with the updates that might happen like in the future. This is definitely true of Nintendo games there or Switch games. So, and now with consoles like the Switch being like in region free, a lot of these games already have like English language in them. So, you know, just buying like a Asian copy or like Japanese copy, you're essentially getting the same game oftentimes for cheaper and actually like working, where you don't have, you're not beholden to having internet access for like a download to play the game.
That's cool. Thanks for the tips there on that. I also, similar to you, I didn't buy a ton. I bought a little sampling of a bunch of little things, but it was all just about having a good time, and you know, that was mission accomplished. But I bought, I'm trying to have just every Sony published PS1 game. It's not that big of a list. It's 151 games, so it's not too hard to do. But I found a couple that I needed there for a decent price, but got Crash Bandicoot Warped and A Bug's Life, the Pixar, you know, platformer that was actually pretty fun. I remember enjoying it quite a bit as a kid. But physically bought at least two games, so that was cool. Just like you, I got that Yoko Kids, the Volume 1 and 2 from Ian. We had been, just because of the way the Blue Sky gaming community is, we had already been following each other, but we just, you know, be able to introduce ourselves and actually meet each other. It was cool. We kept running into each other, but he came over and bought a couple of my zines. And then when he told me that, you know, he had made some, he, you know, went back and grabbed them. And so I bought those from him, and those look super cool. I'm looking forward to digging into those. I mean, they're like, a really cool artistic grab bag. It's an anthology of, like, you know, like reviews, comics, illustrations, poems, you know, recipes, role-playing, like, you know, paper role-playing games. Like, there's, it's just a grab bag of things, and they all, on the profits they make, go to support some really good causes as well too, which is really cool to see they do that. I sadly am making zines for my own money, and people like Ian are out there making zines to help some worthy causes, so check those things out. I would recommend you see those. And then I also bought the Game Boy modding book. There was a booth downstairs in the marketplace, you know, with all the people selling games, but it's by a guy named Greg Farrell. And he was there actually himself signing copies. So he signed and doodled inside mine. But it's this cool book on kind of a beginner's guide to like collecting and modding a Game Boy, like all on your own. I've read the first two chapters of it so far, but it literally is a walkthrough of that, like the tools you need, the environment that you need, like the way to like hunt and find like cost effective like sources to like get some of these things, like minor mods, like just a backlight mod, or like fully customizing them. But it's all done not just in like a written text and all that stuff. It's got a lot of like hand-drawn like comics and illustrations to like lead you through how to do it, and it's really encouraging for you to kind of try it. And I had no intention of wanting to physically mod one myself. I just wanted to read it as like a comics and a gaming fan, but now after a couple chapters in, I would like to maybe, you know, get one and mess around with it and actually like do a little backlight mod and paint it like a special color and everything. So that might be something I do in the future, but that was a really cool book that I saw. And then wasn't anything I purchased, but Walker on the Floor, she was a freelance artist. I mean, she works in the industry as well, but her Maddie is somebody who's all over social media as well. And as I followed them, they friends of friends have already been following them. She was actually walking around with Diamond at the time, but she does some cool comics. I already checked out her site, and mixes like comics and comic book storytelling and everything with like Metal Gear and comedy and everything. And it's like the perfect thing for me. I had no idea this existed, and I'm upset that it took me this long to come into her orbit. But that was super cool. I got a pin, which is like a snake with a Ape Escape mask over his head and everything. It's a really nice pin. So that was a nice little pickup there from the show. But yeah, otherwise, it was a really good experience. Like, I'm super lucky. I mean, I got to, again, thank you, Luis, for helping put the good word in for me as well. But all the folks there at Long Island put on a great show. And it gets my full 10 out of 10, you know, must see, must go, must visit endorsement from a standpoint of a fan, you know, or any chance you can get. If you're in the New York area, you definitely should miss it. But any last words you want to share about the show then, Luis, before we wrap?
Oh, it's a great show. And I would say that this year, it was one of the best experiences I've ever had, like in a con/expo. And they dropped massive news, which for a video game history nerd like me, just blew me away, which is that Leonard Herman, if you know, for people who might be familiar, you know, he's the author of what's arguably the first book on video game history, which is Phoenix. And during, you know, during the expo, you know, he stated that his Phoenix 5, which is essentially the fifth edition of the book, will be released, which will run essentially from the beginning of the history of video games all the way to the year 2025. And that's going to be out in two volumes with press run, which is that really blew me away. I had the pleasure to do a panel with Herman, along with others, with Jeremy Parrish from Retronauts, Kevin Bunch, Brian Clark, and Ryan Berger, who runs the Old School Gaming magazine, which I spoke about. It was really, that took this to like another level. That book means a lot to me. And it's a foundational text. If you want to know about video games. So knowing that there's going to be a fifth edition with really high production quality. I saw where the book is currently right now, and it looks great. It looks great.
Yeah, your panel was standing room only. I was going to pop in there, and before that even started, there was a line out the door of in a queue waiting to get in and everything. So I was unable to attend that. But the show also did a good production job. They were taking like lots of video and photos all throughout it and sharing that on social media. But they also were recording their panels. So I believe the intention is that they'll have these panels up on their on YouTube and on their social media pages and all that stuff as well to watch in the near future too. So you should hopefully be able to check that out. I know there was some things going on with all that, so I don't know exactly how they plan to release it, but I guess, you know, look forward to that potentially being available to check out. And as soon as I hear and get word of that, I'll share some links on my own social media there as well too. But yeah, I had a great time. Any last words then, Luis, before we call it a day?
It was great finally meeting you in person there. That was also a highlight. And that's great. I mean, it's just a great like place to be. Long Island Retro Gaming Expo. If you can make it, definitely do it. And if you're like on the fence, but you know, it's not like a horrible trek for you, definitely do it as well. It's just really amazing.
Yes. Yes, I will echo the same things. It was great meeting you in person as well. We got to walk the mean streets of Long Island, hop some fences, and you know, be out after dark and everything. But I was never in danger. You know, I had the muscle with me, so it was a good time. So hopefully we can repeat it all again. You know, if not next year, you know, whenever they would like to have me back, you know, I'm there. Like, this is a show that I'll continue to promote and endorse and be thankful for, because some rad people doing some rad things in Long Island. Y'all should check that out. But with that, we'll wrap this bonus episode up. A little something different from the normal feed. We will have our regularly scheduled show, you know, as usual. I'm just going to post this out whenever I get done editing it, so y'all can catch it as soon as possible and get a little recap of the Long Island Retro Gaming Expo 2025. But Luis, thank you so much, and we'll catch you all on a future episode soon. Bye.
Yeah, thank you. Bye.
Listen to Flashback 64, the chronological Nintendo 64 podcast. Hosts Gooey, McKenna, and friends flashback to the 90s and early 2000s with a look at the Nintendo 64's catalog and its contemporary, cultural, and historical context. Starting with the console's launch titles and proceeding in release order, we discuss classics like GoldenEye, Super Mario 64, and Star Fox 64, as well as some not-so-beloved games, lesser-known titles, and everything in between. Along with game-specific deep dives, we also cover other bits of pop culture from the time, like films, music, and more. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.